I wanted to let you know, and this isn't like what
Okay, go ahead.
And let the listeners know, because we recently released an episode on Quiverful. I wanted to tell you that this week I have been, what I'll say is pussy deep in plaths.
Wow. The syntax on this alone is...
I had to.
It's what I crave. Go on.
So I talked about Welcome to Plathville on that episode, and unknowingly...
Wait, quick pause. Is their last name Plath, and then they just call the show Plathville?
Yes. So the family's the family's last name is Plath, and the show is called Welcome to Plathville. It's available on TLC or Hulu. But
that's so dumb. I hate this.
Didn't know this when we recorded this episode. I thought that like they did one season and that was a wrap on the show. No,
it's like a little mini series.
Exactly. But no, season two started this past week. So I watched the episode, and then all of like there's a string of interviews with each family member and like pairs of family members. It was amazing. So I just wanted to let you guys know that, like, if you're interested in the Plaths, like, that is out there.
Do you like them more or less than the Duggars?
Way more. Way more.
Why?
Because what's happening in, like, the narrative of Welcome to Plathville is that the parents think that the family is falling apart. But what's actually happening is the older kids are waking up to the ways that they were essentially... Not essentially, that they were honestly abused. And so I talked about not last time, but in that episode, that the oldest son, Ethan, like is moved out with his wife, Olivia, and they're not allowed to have contact with the younger kids. The parents.
Unsupervised.
Yeah, not unsupervised. The parents now decided that Micah and Mariah, the next two kids, and Micah is 19 and Mariah is 17 and still in high school, they decided and homeschool, by the way.
I would expect nothing less. Go on.
They decided that Micah and Mariah needed to move out of the house, and so I'm assuming that they're using their Welcome to Plathville money from filming to rent an apartment together. So the Plaths kicked out like two of their teenagers.
Oh my God, kicked them out?
They didn't want them to be influences on the younger children. And so, like, the only ones that are at home now are, like a 14-year-old who's really struggling with being there isolated. And then, like, a mess of really little kids that, like, don't really know what's going on. And
I was going to say, though, you think these kids aren't going to get affected by you kicking out their older siblings? Like, they're going to be like, I'm so unchanged now.
And all of the, like the other siblings that are at home, they do interviews with them and they're like so upset and disappointed that they can't see their older siblings anymore.
Aww,
and also,
sweet babies.
If you're homeschooling a 17-year-old who you're like trying to bar from going to college, you can't kick her out of your house like before she's graduated, like when you're also her schooling. So it's like a whole thing now. She's trying to figure out how to like get a GED because like their family never got accredited for homeschool programs.
Yeah. Think about that you were like, we're homeschooling her and then kicked her out. And now she doesn't have a way to finish high school. Oh my God.
And so she was working three jobs. She was working at a mechanic shop, working at a restaurant, and then at a clothing store or something, and trying to do like online school at night. Yeah.
I'm stressed out for this whole family.
Me too. And the parents just keep saying that like it's the children's fault, and they have like these
Okay, anytime you think it's the kids' fault and it's not like a dish was broken, like I've got some questions. You know what I mean? Like a kid's fault is like, yeah, they broke your vase. Like
Like they were uncomfortable with you talking about sex, so you didn't tell them about it. That's not their fault.
I mean, listen.
They literally, I can't even. You should really go watch it, though.
Welcome
it's like
to Plathville. Welcome to hell, motherfuckers. Like,
welcome to Plathville, and also.
And also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
You made that up. Listen.
And remember, the greatest myth about the moon is that America went there in Apollo 11. Good night. Good night.
We would take Jamie's grandma's underwear, run them underwater, put them all in the freezer.
All of them, though. So there were none.
Literally every pair.
Ooh, quick pause for a thermometer read. Do you believe in hypnosis?
like ethically?
Lisa Frank went to high school with the Romneys. And then I'm going to have the second mouth on my back.
That needs feeding.
Needs feeding.
Welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we talk to you about Jim Bob Duggar, TLC programming, and this new series, The Plathville, on our current pussy deep discovery of Quiverful Families. Welcome. But we're also talking about pop culture, pseudoscience, real science. It's not all quiverfuls, although apparently a lot of it is, in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan, truly pussy deep in Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams, also pussy deep in Chicago, but with cats. I'm trying to make it work, but it's a reach. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm literally deep in pussies. My cat pussies. Yeah, sure. Why not?
That's what I'm trying to. Maybe ankle deep in pussy. That's what we can say about you.
That's accurate. I'd say I'm mid calf deep in pussy over here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. it.
Yep. I love it.
We're not talking about the Plaths today or pussies.
Well, we could, though.
We could make it happen, but it's not really. No, it's not
connected. I'm going to try and talk more about pussies. Go on.
If you could, see if you can get it in five or six times. Yeah.
Okay. Start the counter, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. But Austin apparently is going to try to slip pussy talk into the topic today of folie à deux. What is that, you ask?
Speaking of words we cannot pronounce, go on.
It's a French phrase meaning madness of two. It's almost like a contagious mental illness. I know it seems crazy to say that, like...
okay. I'm ready to get into a...
Contagious mental illness.
Sure. Well, I mean, why not?
Keep it light this week, you know?
We need a break. I tried to keep it light last week and I ended up talking about like traumatic brain injuries when I was trying to find something quote unquote fun. So, yeah. Guys, 2020's been a weird year, okay?
It is. The humor is changing, whatever. Anyway, we will talk about like what that actually is, like diagnosis, like all of that shit. But before we... dive in. I want to retell an incident that demonstrates this happening.
From your own life?
No. Yes. No.
Oh, I got excited. Okay.
Definitely not. And then later I would maybe like to talk about how this could happen for us through quarantine, perhaps like that we're all more susceptible to this right now, but that's for later.
All right.
So the story that I would like to tell is a story of two sisters, and you may have, and I'm sorry if you have, heard this story before. They talked about it on My Favorite Murder, like in season one at one point.
Okay, well.
So apologies and act surprised.
Fans out there, but.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you that I'm sorry and act surprised.
Yeah, I mean,
surprised.
If it was on MFM, I've probably heard it. Yes, go but on. It's I'll the pretend best, to be surprised.
Yes, this is like one of the best examples that I could find. It's very interesting. Okay, so I'll tell you about the Erickson sisters. So Sabina Erickson and her identical twin sister Ursula were born in Sweden on the 3rd of November 1967. So they were Scorpios, just clocking it.
This is already not boding well for them. Go on.
They grew up in Sun, which I think is in Sweden. It's in mainland Europe. Sorry about that. They had two other siblings. So like there were the two sisters and then two other kids in the house growing up. One was named Mona and they had an older brother named Bjorn. And growing up in their youth.
Bjorn.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I love that J and makes the three dots. Anyway, you know.
Two dots.
But the J gets a dot too. So.
Oh, try dots.
Yeah. Anyway, so in their youth, there was no apparent history of mental health issues or anything criminal from any of the children.
Okay. No criminal children charges filed. Go on.
No. And by
it was the children's fault. You know, it wasn't just a vase break. Okay, go on.
So by the year 2000, Ursula was living in the United States while Sabina was living in Ireland with her partner and two children.
Okay, wow. So how old are they at this point in time?
If they were born in 67, they are 33. So
okay,
33-year-old twins, an ocean apart, one with kids and a husband, and one not. So Ursula is the one who lives in America.
In the States.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she comes to visit her twin sister Sabina on Friday, May 16th of 2008. And so now
I have her. This one. Okay, go on.
Hold it. Yeah, you can, if you remember things,
guys,
like you can interject.
Fucked up. Get ready. This shit's fucked. Okay.
Yeah. And then we'll talk about it probably in like a lens that you haven't heard. But okay, here we go. So
can't wait. This is fucked up.
On Friday, May 16th of 2008, for reasons that are unclear, the twin sisters secretly departed from Sabina's home in Ireland and they left for Liverpool, England. They probably traveled by ferry, but they arrived in Liverpool early Saturday morning, and they went to the St. Anne Street police station, where they apparently tried to report concerns over the safety of Sabina's children, who they had just left behind in Ireland.
Feels weird.
Feels a little weird. So the Liverpool police contacted Dublin to follow up on their quest, and then they learned that Sabina had a fight with her partner the previous night. And then around 11:30 that morning, the twin sisters boarded the National Express coach and headed to London. And that is a bus, in case you were wondering.
Yeah, coach bus.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So while they're on the bus, they're like acting kind of weird, and the bus driver is like feeling concerned about it. He wants to search their bags because they're like tightly clutching them and like being weird at other guests, and they refuse to let him.
You gotta be pretty weird on a bus for people to
for
be like, this
real
person's weird, because like people on the bus are just inherently weird.
People just, I've had to,
someone who takes buses.
Absolutely. And I don't even take buses that often. And I've had to,
I've been the weird person on a bus, but nobody wanted to search me.
And good for you. But I've had to lift
people
my feet
like,
for urine trails on the bus
who's
before.
Hung over as shit, clutching a gallon sized bag of tortilla chips to her own devices.
And no one was trying to search that bag that you were clutching. But
no, you could tell I was my only caloric intake.
So they have like a little weirdness with the bus driver, and then they're like, oh, we're not feeling well, we need to get off the bus. And he's like, that's fucking fine.
He's like, fine, get out of here, bitch. Okay.
And so he's like, pulls over at a place that's not a bus stop. It's called Keeley Services, which I think is just like a gas station. But okay. I'm not European, so I'm not sure. But
I mean, we can't know.
So he leaves, and the twin sisters are now at this gas station. And this part has been captured on closed circuit television cameras.
Oh, you know it's good when it's on the closed circuit TV. You know the story is going to be good when they're like, so we caught them on tape. Mm-hmm.
The pair departed the services station on foot and began to walk down the central reservation of the M6, which is the median of the goddamn highway.
I mean, weird. Weird.
Before attempting to cross it, causing chaos to the traffic and picking up minor injuries in the attempt, Sabina...
Minor injuries. Okay, sorry.
Sabina was struck briefly. Their elder brother... claimed in a Swedish newspaper that his sisters were fleeing from maniacs at this time who were chasing them.
I mean, okay, this is sounding like everybody's losing their
marbles
at this point.
Right, so then I'm like, oh, so he is, like, in this also? He's, like, believing whatever they're believing too? Question mark. Unsure. So highway agency officers responded to the incident, and police from the Central Motorway Police Group were called to assist. The police were accompanied by, of course, a small television crew who just happened to be filming something called Motorway Cops with the officers.
I mean, okay. Mm-hmm.
This is both fortunate and unfortunate and kind of like gross, but interesting. So standing on the north direction, on the shoulder of the motorway, the police were kind of just like appraising the situation. When, without warning, and you can watch this video if you want on YouTube, Ursula broke free of the police hold and ran into the side of an oncoming Mercedes-Benz.
Oh my God. We will be watching this probably on our own time. Not that I'm saying I'm promoting like, you know, violent YouTube videos, but a little bit. Wow.
If you want to just like watch, I don't know, if you're hearing this and you want a visual, I guess, the Benz was going about 56 miles per hour. So it really got her. And
I mean, that's such a generous way of putting it. It really got her.
I'm sorry. Sabina, the other twin sister, then quickly followed her into the road and was hit head on by a Volkswagen traveling at high speed.
Fucking A, dude.
Yes. Both survived.
Wait, what?
Ursula was immobilized as the car had crushed
it's
her legs.
It's less stressful to watch these videos since they didn't die. Go on.
100%. Like, these women are both still alive, I think.
Oh.
No. So, both survived. Ursula was immobilized as her legs were crushed, and Sabina spent about 15 minutes unconscious. So, the paramedics came over, treated them. Ursula was resisting the medical aid by spitting and scratching and screaming. And
I mean, why not?
Why not? Why not? And Ursula told the policeman restraining her, quote, "I recognize you. I know you're not real." And Sabina, who had now regained consciousness, shouted, "They're going to steal your organs." To the surprise of...
Oh, we're roping in a lot of... I was like, facial blindness? And now I'm like, organ theft? Conspiracy?
Maniacs chasing them? It's a lot of things. It's vague. The children are in trouble, but you left them behind. I'm not sure.
The kids are not all right, you know, to your point.
So Sabina then starts screaming for help and calling for the police, even though they were already present. Then she hits an officer in the face before running into traffic again on the other side of the motorway. Emergency workers and several members of the public caught up with her, restrained her, and then carried her to a waiting ambulance, at which point she was handcuffed and sedated. Given the similarities in their behaviors, like the two of them, initially the police suspected a suicide pact or that they were heavy drug users.
Right, like that they're, you know, on PCP or they are, you know.
Yeah, like that's a possible explanation for these, like, clear delusions that they're having. So they're both taken to the hospital, and Sabina has, like, a strange lack of concern about her sister's injuries and her own, and, like, is, I guess, recovered and fine to leave, like, 5 hours later.
That seems a little too quick for such a car injury situation. I don't know.
Yes. And so, like, eventually she was charged for assaulting a police officer and, like, so, like, some kind of highway disturbance. It was a charge I was, like, as an American, not familiar with.
Sure. Or just as someone who probably hasn't heard a lot of court cases about people running into traffic.
It's true, yeah. This is the first one. So she's released from the hospital. She gets charged with that, but ultimately is let go after serving one night in police custody.
Okay.
Then she's got to go to court. But leaving court, Sabina began to wander the streets of Stoke-on-Trent, which is an area I'm unfamiliar with, but exists. And she's trying...
Thank you for that brief description of this location. Okay, go on. It's an area I've never heard of, but I'm under the impression is real. Okay.
Yeah. So she's trying to locate her sister in the hospital, and she's carrying all of her possessions in the clear plastic bag that the police give you, like, after you leave. She's also wearing her sister's green top. So, like, somehow they've also switched clothing. And at 7 p.m. that day, two local men spot Sabina while they're walking their dog in the area. And they notice that she is behaving nervously, which worries them. Sabina appeared friendly, strokes the dog, and, like, strikes up a conversation. And she asks the two men for directions or, like, to tell her if there's a hotel or something nearby where she can stay.
Okay, this isn't weird.
It is not.
Yet.
Hollinshed, one of the men, took pity on her and instead offered to take her back to his house at nearby Duke Street. Sabina accepted. Well,
it's pretty weird.
It's pretty weird, and I would not want for someone with a clear mental illness to just go into a strange man's house. Anyway, so...
I also, who are these people who are just like, just come home with me? Listen, anybody inviting you just to come over from the streets,
If two men are walking a dog and strike up a conversation with you and invite you to their home because you look distressed, don't go.
You say no, okay?
So let's see how it turns out for Sabina. Sabina accepted and relaxed as she began to relate how she was trying to locate her hospitalized sister. Back at the house, over drinks, her odd behavior continued as she constantly got up and looked out of the window, leading the men to assume that she had run away from an abusive partner. So that's the vibe that they're catching. She appeared paranoid,
that's
too.
That's a lot of inferences.
Okay. It is. And it says she appeared paranoid, too, offering the men cigarettes, only to quickly snatch them back out of their mouths, claiming the cigarettes were poisoned. That's a strange one.
Okay, I mean, okay.
I feel like something that would do.
Oh, we're gonna have to bleep that name.
We are, and I can't even explain why something like why this reminds me of a person we know, so I'm not going to.
We can't. Someone we used to work with.
Shortly before midnight, Malloy left.
We tried to prove she was related to a serial killer once. Anyway,
we did. So shortly before midnight, Malloy, who is like the friend, leaves, and Sabina stays the night with Holinshed at his house. The next day, around midday, Holinshed called his brother.
Was this, like, sexual at all, or?
To my knowledge, no. Like, seems pretty innocent so far.
Okay.
In the morning, he's helping Sabina try to locate her sister, Ursula. He's making some calls to local hospitals and just, like, trying
this
to help her
really
with resources.
Just, like, is, like, going for it. He's like, oh, you know, I was walking my dog, but I'd like to get deeply entrenched in someone else's dramatic life. Okay.
Yeah, and maybe this can be a cautionary tale for good Samaritans.
Not that we're not trying to, I mean, help people, but, you know, have boundaries.
Yeah. So she's there all day, and at 7:40, so, like, into the evening, they are, like, preparing a meal and just living a newly domestic life together already. And Holinshed...
they're like, we live together now.
Holinshed leaves the house to ask a neighbor for tea bags. And when he comes back inside...
How very English of him.
Very, very, very English.
Are we in England still?
Yes.
We think. Okay, go on.
Remember, though, there was that area that I was pretty sure existed, but I wasn't sure where it was.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was in England or not, or if we knew, you know?
Well, if you're super curious about it, you can rewind to when I said it and give it a goog, because, like, I don't want to find it in my notes. So he's, like, borrowing the tea, going to the neighbor's house, then comes back into his own house. And 1 minute after coming back into his own home, staggers.
1 minute. 60 seconds.
60 seconds later, Holinshed staggers out of his own home, bleeding profusely, and tells the neighbor, "She stabbed me," before collapsing to the ground and quickly dying from his injuries.
Oh, my God.
Onto Sabine's flight. As the neighbor dialed 999, which I suppose is the British version of 911, Sabina fled the premises. This was caught once again on a nearby CCTV.
The
UK has those everywhere, though. Like, in the UK, they're super open about filming stuff. And, like, you know that, like, on any corner, like, if you're going to a gas station, wherever, like, you're always going to be filmed, and, like, it's fine, and they're not secretive about it. So you can catch her on the CCTV as she ran out of the house with a hammer, periodically hitting herself over the head with it.
Nope.
A passing motorist saw this and decided to tackle her in an attempt to take control of the hammer. While wrestling with him,
everyone's decisions are horrible. The craziest shit, and then being like, "How do I get involved?" Like, what?
I know, and no one's getting involved in, like, a calm, rational way at all.
No, no one's like, "Should I?" I don't. I got questions.
Yeah, so do I. So they're having a struggle while wrestling.
Okay, keep going.
While wrestling with him, Sabina screamed and took a roof tile out of her pocket and struck him on the back of the head with it, stunning him temporarily. By this time, the paramedics had found her. So this pursuit is coming to a close it ends at a place called Heron Cross when Sabina jumped from a 40-foot-high bridge onto a lower highway, breaking...
Concerned if I hadn't already been told she's still alive.
Breaking both ankles and fracturing her skull in the fall, she was taken to the hospital.
Well, thank God. Let's get this woman some help.
Seriously, it's about time. So the trial on June 6th of 2008, so about a month later, she was arrested while recovering at a local hospital in Staffordshire, so probably England, and was discharged on September 11th, at which point she was taken into custody immediately and charged with murder the same day. So, like, as soon as she's recovered from the hospital, they're like,
oh,
cool,
murder.
Now
she did stab that guy.
Now we'll collect you.
I forgot. I was like, wait, she killed someone? And then I was like, that was part of the story.
And okay, she assaulted that man with the hammer and the tile fragment that was just in her pocket.
Got concerns.
Yes. So the trial happened in February, but was adjourned after the court was just having difficulties getting her medical records from Sweden and trying to determine kind of like what actually happened through all of this. And Sabina ended up pleading guilty to manslaughter with diminished responsibility, having stabbed her victim 5 times with a kitchen knife.
I mean,
at no point during her interrogation or during the trial did she explain her actions. She only replied no comment to extensive police questioning, just over and over.
No comment.
Mm-hmm.
No comment.
Well. Yeah. Similarly, at no time was the video from the M6 highway incident used as evidence in court. Both the prosecution and defense claimed that Sabina was insane at the time of the killing, although she had become sane again by the time of her trial.
I do have some questions when people are like, they were insane. I'm like, what is it? Define.
Well, and we can, you know, once we start talking about folie à deux in a minute, like, we can decide if we think that temporary insanity was possible right here.
All right, I'm listening.
Yeah. So the defense counsel in the trial claimed that she was a secondary sufferer of folie à deux, influenced by the presence or perceived presence of her twin sister, who was the primary sufferer. The court also heard that she had suffered from a rare psychiatric disorder which made her hear voices but could not interpret what they said, as well as
how do you hear? This is like people are speaking to me but in tongues?
In tongues, like, or whispers, perhaps. Okay. So her plea was eventually accepted by the prosecution, and it was concluded that Sabina had a low level of culpability for her actions. And what the court said about that was, we understand that this sentence seemed entirely inadequate to the relatives of the deceased. However, I have sentenced on the basis that the reason for killing was the mental illness, and therefore the culpability of the defendant is low, and therefore the sentence I have passed is designed to protect the public. It is not designed to reflect the grief of the relatives or measure the value of Mr. Hollenstedt's life. So he goes on to say that he feels that they can't hold her any more accountable than you could hold a rabid dog accountable for biting someone.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So in the aftermath, many questions were left unanswered.
I got plenty of questions still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do I. So do I. But if you want to know more, there is a 2010 documentary called Madness in the Fast Lane. And this is a BBC documentary about this situation and like how the various television shows filming kind of like interacted with it, and then like how the trial went. So if you want to know a little more about that, go ahead. But I would like to now talk about how this relates to folie à deux.
Yeah, I'm trying to get an understanding because the sibling relationship here is still all a little fuzzy.
Yes. So folie à deux, which I mentioned up top, is basically French for madness for two. So
what a cute little title.
Yeah.
Frenchy.
Yeah. It's also known as shared psychosis or shared delusional disorder, SDD.
Immediately, the first thing I'm thinking of is like cult leaders and their protege, like they're number two in the cult, you know?
Yes. And so to that point with cults, there's folie à trois, folie à quatre, and folie beaucoup.
Numbers.
So like you can have madness for like one, two,
folie
three.
Folie beaucoup. I like that.
It just means many, many fools. Yeah. And so a cult would be more like that, where maybe there's like a folie à deux thing happening, like say between like Marshall Applewhite and like that woman who co-led that cult with him, yep. who I can't remember, T and Doe. And then
T and Doe. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Folly Boku.
For Heaven's Gate, right?
Exactly.
T and Doe is Heaven's Gate.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so I would guess T and Doe and Heaven's Gate have Folly Ajo between them, with mm-hmm. one being more in charge and the other being more like going along with it.
Sure.
But believing it wholeheartedly. And then
oh, yeah.
a Folly Boku situation is the entirety of Heaven's Gate. It's that all of them are living in this delusion together.
This feels right. Okay.
So this disorder was first conceptualized by 19th century French psychiatrists Charles Lagot and Jean-Pierre Faure. So it used to be called Lascaux-Faure syndrome, but then later was called Folly à deux. And Folly à deux is not currently in the DSM. So, like, we're on DSM-5 now, and it's not in there. Mm-hmm. But it was in DSM-4. So it did get kicked out because it was determined that it wasn't, like, a unique enough disorder. It was more of, like, other disorders interacting with each other.
Okay.
But I still think it's, like, a really interesting... It's more of a relationship style or like a situation that evolves than a unique illness, I guess.
Bring it in.
Yeah. So signs and symptoms, in case you want to check yourself, I guess.
I'm ready. I want to know if we're in this pattern. Go on. As
you
us
and I
together. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll hold my tongue for now, but we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. So,
oh, good. Okay.
This syndrome is most commonly diagnosed when two or more individuals live in proximity and are socially and or physically isolated from other people. So,
well, quarantine could be right
exactly.
for the picking for this stuff. Let's go, people. Everybody falling into some shit. Let's go.
How are your home relationships, everyone? How paranoid are you? Various subclassifications have been proposed to describe how the delusional beliefs come to be held by more than just one person. So, folly imposée is where a dominant person who is known as the primary or inducer or principal, which is Ursula in the case of the Erikson sisters.
Got it.
So, not the woman who killed. The twin who did not murder was the primary. And she initially formed...
That's some Manson shit. Get people to do your dirty work.
Exactly. So, the primary initially forms a delusional belief during some kind of psychotic episode and imposes it on another person or persons. And they are, like, the secondary or, like, acceptor role. And there's the assumption that the secondary person might not have become deluded if they were left to their own devices. So if parties are admitted to hospitals separately in folie à deux situations, often the delusions in the person who is secondary resolve without, like, medication or treatment. So just being separated from the primary alleviates the symptoms in the secondary, typically.
Interesting.
Then there's simultanee. Seems like
nailed it. I don't speak French.
Seems like French for simultaneous. Describes either a situation where two people are considered to suffer independently from psychosis influence, and then together they have, like, delusions that merge. So sometimes it'll be two people who have kind of, like, strikingly similar thinking, maybe, or maybe
this
two
is how the tinfoil hat folks find, like, tinfoil hat partners.
Yes. So this is not like one sister who doesn't have a lot of opinions and another sister who is, like, weaving Kevlar bags to, like, put around her phone and convinces the other one. This is tinfoil hats finding each other. You're right.
Got it. Okay.
And so they are, like, comorbidly triggering each other constantly. And so
you talk to the pigeons, I talk to the squirrels. Together, we're talking to all the wildlife.
Exactly. The current DSM states that a person cannot be diagnosed as delusional if the belief in question is one, quote, ordinarily accepted by other members of the person's culture or subculture.
Say more there.
It is not clear at what point a belief is considered to be delusional or when it slips outside what is, like, a normal subcultural belief. So that's kind of a sticky definition.
starts to rope in all religions. Yes,
okay. It does. It starts to like exclude cults from the definition if we say, is it normal within a subculture? But whatever. Mm-hmm. Now we're splitting hairs. But basically, the conclusion was that Folie à Deux is more of just a delusion disorder in one person, and then maybe it's like abusively affecting another person. So they don't like to diagnose it as something because it feels put upon. Like if it's answered by just like removing a person from a situation, then that's not a disorder that you have. Like that's a bad situation that you're in that's negatively affecting your mental health.
Right.
And then as with most psychological disorders, the extent of the delusions varies. So you can see like some people having like super mild delusions. Like maybe they just believe that like, I don't know, like all pickles are poison. And like that doesn't.
Or they're being watched.
That's like a little more extreme. But
really, you think pickles being poisoned, all of them, is less extreme than feeling watched?
I guess no. Anyway, so those were poor examples of extreme or not extreme delusions, but it's a sliding scale. So like there's typically like one person who develops some degree of psychosis and affects another person. And I wanted to ask you
If I'm a part of your psychosis, go on.
If you feel that the Dawn incident fits into this in any way.
No, I just think that's persuasion. Dear listeners, let me give you a little bit of backstory on what, quote unquote, the Dawn incident is. And yes, in our friendship, we do refer to this as the Dawn incident.
We do.
When Jamie and I were in seventh grade, we hit fifth, seventh?
It was fifth grade because Mrs. Kane.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So we hit a very... we were very engulfed in science.
It was
our science phase.
Yeah.
It was, I feel like the science phase went deep into seventh grade.
We it did. About the it was years.
And when you're in fifth grade, science is just like the stages of matter. That's like all you get, you know, liquid, solid, gas. And so we were like, cool. You know, we had learned about like, I don't know, steam or something. And we were like, here's the thing. If you take liquid soap, and you know, heated it up and evaporated, you know, all the water out of it, you would just have soap flakes. You'd have hard soap. And we were like, we should make hard soap. It seemed like something we wanted to produce. And so we took a bunch of Dawn and we put it in a skillet and we put it over some heat in my parents' house while no one was there supervising us. And it turned colors. It filled the air. We got very nauseous.
There were flakes
in the air.
My mom
tells the story of like when she knew things were wrong because like the moment she opened the door, Jamie was standing there saying, "Wendy, we're really sorry." We like had to. My mom had to open all the windows in the house. It was.
She
like,
called
a whole
poison
vibe,
control, and we sat outside for like the whole evening.
Yeah, drinking grape juice. I remember. Basically, light science phase. We thought, you know, this is the time that we make our fortune selling people hard soap that we made out of Dawn. But we, you know, we didn't understand like heating chemicals, you know.
We were focused on
other things.
On the state change, like taking a liquid to a solid. Yes, by getting rid of the water. We thought that would work.
We had particles in the air, people. There was like shit floating.
Black
it
ash.
Was crazy.
It was really bad.
It was inside really my bad. Parents' house. It was the time. my parents ultimately thought it was kind of hilarious. And we're like, so maybe don't do this again. No one was in trouble. I just like to say that.
I really appreciated that no one was in trouble. Yeah.
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 I think my mom did recount this to our science teacher, like at a parent teacher conference night, who was like really mortified. And my mom thought it was really funny. So
like,
that's
listen, you're teaching these girls things that they're coming home and doing unsupervised.
Right. That was us.
It was.
But. That to say, do I think this was... No, I mean, I think it was just like persuasion and not a lot of forward thought. I don't think we were mentally ill because we were trying to make soap.
I guess like the reason why that even comes to mind for me is I think about like in that moment in fifth grade, standing in your kitchen, and in my mind, in this moment, I am the primary.
Always the primary. It's fine. In your mind, in practice, whatever. I mean, you're quoted on this podcast as saying, when I said I wouldn't do something with you, you said, and I quote, What? I thought you were going to say absolutely. You always do everything I tell you to do.
That is recorded and many people have heard it. And there's nothing I can do about that. But those are my feelings and that is true. So
you think I do everything? I can't. I have no autonomy in Jamie's mind in this friendship.
No. But I guess I'm thinking about like my little fifth grade self standing there with like dollar signs in my eyes, like thinking about us like peddling like various like scented and like beautifully shaped soaps to neighborhood moms. And sure. Kind of selling you on that idea.
We were about a get rich quick scheme too.
We were all about a get rich quick. Yes. And so The reason why I'm relating this to Folie à Deux is because this was an illogical train of thought that I had that
I presented to you
logically and you came into that same thinking with me. And then we were both like in it wrong together, envisioning this same future where we peddle soaps.
I mean, truly, I still am going to steer away from this mental illness as much as I'm going to say, like, one of us is a little manipulative and the other one's a little gullible. So here we are.
Whatever. And is that so different from this? I'm not sure. But you're probably sitting there saying, here we are in quarantine. I've been.
No one got stabbed. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, poison control was called, but no one was stabbed.
Yeah, but we poisoned ourselves, you know? It's a different vibe.
Or did I poison us?
Up for debate.
Didn't land as dramatic as I hoped. So, you're probably thinking, I'm in quarantine right now with my roommate, partner, family, brother. I don't know who you're with.
I'm in quarantine right now, mid-calf deep in pussies. Okay.
Yes, and let's I will tell one. You that it is possible to develop a Folie à Deux relationship with an animal.
God bless. That's all I wanted. Okay.
The animal is, of course, the secondary. Can you imagine if the animal was the primary?
Oh, I thought you were going to say the animal is, of course, the primary.
No. The animal can't, like, effectively communicate its mental illness to you.
But what if you think it is?
Oh, God. That's a big old... twist them out. Oh, but an example of like Folie à Deux in a person and pet situation is there was an individual who was really like having delusions of war. It was just like post-traumatic stress situation. It was very sad. But they would hide under the table like whenever there was a loud noise, like thinking that it was a bomb. And
The dog's in on this.
Yes, yes. The animals in the house then, of course, like began reacting the same way. And anytime there was a loud noise, even if the owner didn't get down, the animals all like shot under a table or a couch.
I'm sad for these animals.
Okay. I know.
And this person. I'm sad for all parts involved.
Me too.
Cue the Sarah McLachlan.
Cue it. but you're wondering probably, what are the triggers? What should I look out for during?
Oh yeah, I am wondering. Are we gonna do it in quarantine? Because it does, to your point, seem like we're ripe for the picking.
It does. So while the exact causes of STD are unknown, the main
STD. There comes that acronym.
The main two contributors are stress and social isolation. So that's tough right now because I'm not really sure how you manage either of those. But yeah, I would actually be curious, like, if there are more instances of Folie à Deux in 2020 than ever before, because we are like more isolated with small groups of people or ourselves and animals.
Explain some of the political climate.
I agree 100% because people go down like fucking rabbit trails of thinking with each other in isolation. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. To bring
here
it back.
With YouTube and some parasocial versions of this. You know?
I would actually like to just take a moment to acknowledge what you said because there can absolutely.
Hello, QAnon, it's us.
And beyond QAnon, even I find myself, I think, sometimes susceptible to this. Like when I watch like conspiracy YouTube videos, a lot of times there will be like a person standing in front of a whiteboard, like explaining how something like connects and like is a conspiracy.
Sure. I'm imagining that one shot from like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Go on.
It's not that different in a lot of them. But I find myself when I'm watching these having kind of like some... like awareness, like in a third party way, that like what this person is saying might not really be sound logic, but something about the way that it's presented in like a logical step by step, like this connects to this, connects to this, and this means this, gets into my brain. And I think like,
yeah, that 9/11 truth documentaries will fuck you up, you know?
Some of that, I don't, you know what? I can't speak on that while I'm being recorded. But I find myself like somewhat susceptible to other people's style of thinking in that. And so like when you say, oh, this can happen parasocially, especially during quarantine, absolutely it can. And like, I think that you're right that like, this is QAnon. This is literally QAnon. A folly beaucoup.
I will. Yeah.
Okay. So people who are socially isolated together tend to become dependent on those that they are with, naturally.
Okay.
This can lead to an inducer's influence being, of course, magnified to those around them because you're isolated together. Additionally, people developing shared delusional disorder, SDD, folly beaucoup. Do not have others reminding them that their delusions are either impossible or unlikely.
There it is.
Because of this, treatment for shared delusional disorder includes those affected being removed from the inducer. In particular, relapse is highly likely if the secondary sufferer returns to an isolated living situation which is shared with the primary delusional person. Stress is also a factor because it triggers mental illness. The majority of people that develop shared delusional disorder are genetically predisposed to have mental illness, but this predisposition is not enough to develop a mental disorder. However, stress can induce the risk of this, or increase the risk of this, of course, and the release of...
Stress increases the risk of everything.
Everything. And, of course, like, cortisol gets released, and when your body's releasing too much cortisol...
You fucked.
Yeah, you're kind of fucked. And sometimes, like, dopamine also goes up, and, like, the increase of both of those hormones together can be
linked... You manic.
Yeah. So... For some of us, it's been a manic time in quarantine, you know. But we're not all developing shared delusional disorder. Actually, I don't know. I could fully have it. Maybe I'm not even in California right now.
Who are you in a shared delusion with? Who's sharing in your delusion?
I guess the dog? I suppose. Yeah, I suppose Maddie and the dog. And also everyone I work with. And a handful of friends and a landlord. No, I'm really here. So
we can't know. Go on.
We cannot. So the last thing I want
to
talk about.
Welcome to my simulation. What if you were just a part of my simulation?
I think about that sometimes in the way that I think about like how if.
What if you're
a
character for me, even though you think I do everything you say? What if you're really just designed for me?
Then I would have a lot of questions about why I have independent thoughts and who set up that cruel, cruel simulation.
How do you know? How do you
I guess they don't. I could be like a portioned off bit of your psyche.
You were designed for me.
Yeah.
For my pleasure.
So you must want someone to kind of manipulatively tell you what to do.
I will tell you the reason I can tell you were designed for me is part of one of the flaws in my simulation is the amount of people in my inner circle with gastrointestinal disorders. It's statistically improbable, which is how I've confirmed you're made for me. Go on.
You have like a 25% rate, I feel like, of people in your life having IBD.
You got problems with your colon? You're my best friend. Go on.
Riddly diddly, IBD. Okay, so the last thing that I want to touch on in regards to like the medicine at all of this is the prevalence. So obviously we are all experiencing stress and social isolation right now.
So much, both.
But what's the prevalence? Who's going to come down with this in likeliness? So shared delusional disorder is most commonly found in women with slightly above average IQs. Shout out to the IQ episode.
Everybody take that test. I hope I'm more susceptible, again, because I'd like to think I have a higher than average IQ, and that's a personal problem. Go on!
We'd all like to think that, yes. So it's women with slightly higher than average IQs who are isolated from their family or like typical social circle and are also in a relationship with a dominant person who has delusions.
You. Okay, this is me. I'm the one. Keep going.
Yeah. So pretty specific.
You're my dominant person with delusions. Keep going.
Exactly. I'm not going to act like I don't have some light delusions from time to time.
Okay. So tell them.
The majority of secondary cases, which is people who develop the shared delusion but are not doing it on their own, they also usually meet the criteria for dependent personality disorder.
Somebody's got to.
Exactly, which is characterized by a pervasive fear that leads them to need constant reassurance, support, and guidance, which is then being provided by the delusional primary.
Mm.
Additionally, 55% of secondary cases had a relative with a psychological disorder that included delusions, and as a result, the secondary causes are usually susceptible to mental illness. So there's usually like something going on behind. Like if you have no history of mental illness at all, like yourself or in your family, it's probably pretty unlikely that you're going to slip into either of these roles.
Hmm.
So good for you if you don't have that.
I don't think we're qualifying.
I am absolutely, absolutely at risk.
I feel like we're outlining this for us to be like really the people having these problems.
I know.
I feel like the statistics you pulled specifically are like to argue that we're susceptible.
I can't help it that we're the demo. No, but a point against us being in this type of shared delusion is that most frequently it occurs within a family situation. So like it's often like partners, and in a heterosexual couple, it's more often the female is the primary and the male is secondary. I thought that was interesting because it skewed what I expected.
Grab them by the balls. Okay.
Make them do some crazy stuff.
Make them do some crazy shit. It's about time.
And then, so the even more common, though, is between sisters. And then the most common is between twins.
Well, that puts me in a special category.
That's true. But twin sisters have the highest instance of experiencing folie à deux. And there are some interesting YouTube documentaries about twins with kind of like shared mental disorders. Eating disorders are something that like happens in twins often as a pair.
That's tough.
There was one documentary I saw where like they had to separate the twins so that like they could both recover from their illness. And like one was mentally a little stronger than the other, but it was like absolutely hell to separate them. So
welcome to my simulation.
But as I mentioned earlier, the treatment is just to remove the people from each other, and you let the secondary like reestablish a baseline for their life and learn how to make their own choices. And if it's a family unit, they have to usually do extensive personal and family therapy to like, of course, heal their own delusions, but then also fix the dynamic of the family that's allowing that to happen. However, pretty easy to treat. Just get out of your situation, and if you're the one with the delusion, like,
kill your twin.
Yeah. The answer is to kill your twin. Yes.
Or you're dominant. Bye, Jamie. It's been nice being friends with you.
It really has been
nice. I'm pulling the plug on you in my simulation. I've called the game creators and I've said, listen.
And then I wanted to mention also
I'm done that, with her.
Oh no, what will I do?
I'll won't exist.
Trapped in this level.
It'll be like the Matrix when they pulled the epidural out of the back of your neck.
I know, that's uncomfortable, that clicking sound and the goo.
That's a really stressful part of that movie when they start like disconnecting people without them properly. Honestly, it's like the human version of unsafely removing a flash drive.
That's really funny. But I did want to mention, though, that like the delusions don't have to be bad. Like,
okay,
they can be good or bad delusions. And I think that probably instances of folie à deux that are like more positive probably go pretty unnoticed. This is something that I think about like in family units in like a really light way, where maybe the narrative is that like we're this happy, amazing family and like we're awesome and nothing ever goes wrong. But like that's super
bullshit.
Not true.
No
but
one believes this about your family. No one thinks your family's
but when
good.
People
go
believe
on.
That about their own family.
Who believes their own family is like that?
I have
the
known
Duggars.
Some people. But exactly. Those people.
And some to Plathville, motherfucker.
Some of the Plaths, I would say. I feel that the parents are in a folie à deux relationship in Plathville.
Full circle to these pussies. Okay,
absolutely.
That's two. I've said pussy twice now. Go on.
Thank you. And I don't know, in quarantine and even pre-quarantine, because like I'm kind of a paranoid person.
Sure.
My girlfriend and I have to kind of like check each other that we don't like trigger each other's paranoia too hard.
This is so real.
Like for Christmas last year, like this is pre-COVID anything, we got mm-hmm. each other like emergency, like survival, what are they called? But not a body bag, but a sleeping bag.
Oh my God. Okay.
And like life straws and like a couple other things that are like small, not super expensive, but
trying
like
trying to go off the grid if there's like an apocalyptic moment.
And we have like some maps with like routes out of LA, like charted out.
I can't.
However, having to almost evacuate like the greater Los Angeles area due to fires when it's like gridlock traffic scared the shit out of us.
That's legitimate. These are legitimate fears.
However, the reason why I'm talking about this is because I feel that she and I definitely like trigger each other's paranoia, and we're good about being like, okay, if we're like spending more than like $20 on something, it's not a good idea. And if we're starting to scare ourselves,
give me an example of something that you'd like start to like try and spend more than $20 on that's like a little bit preppery.
So like
what's something you've considered buying?
Like solar panels that lay on your backpack and like charge your phone or other devices while you hike.
Okay.
Like through wherever. But like
that's
when
kind of a cool gadget though.
I think it's really cool. But when we bought the water filter when we lived in Northern Kentucky, that was something that we had to really talk about and be like, are we paranoid and triggering each other, or do we really like need and want this? And the answer was like, we really did need and want that. And it was, I love it.
Well, there was something that seemed truly wrong with the water there. I'll give you that.
And that was not paranoia. That was true. However, it's all of these things that make me think like we would have potentially like the style of folie à deux, like not where there's a primary or secondary, but where like the two tinfoil hats hang out together. As you mentioned. And so that, I don't know, I've been trying to like apply I've been trying to like apply this to my own life and be like, oh, like which one would I be? And like, where is this popping up? And so I don't know. I felt like that was a pretty obvious example. But I don't know. I'm sure that kind of stuff is happening for a lot of people in quarantine.
I think that is fair.
And then to the note of like good delusions outside of like family. And I may have touched on this in the narcissism episode because, of course, there's some overlap.
Sure.
I think like a delusions of grandeur folie à deux or folie beaucoup mm-hmm. situation happened with my brother in a band that he used to be in. Where the lead singer and like band creator was like 45 and like, I don't know, like very narcissistic, like very difficult to work with, but like, again, talked a lot about loyalty and like needed everyone to be like thinking exactly what he was and like any kind of.
We hate to see it.
Mm-hmm. Right. He almost beat my brother up on a bus one time for no perceptible reason.
That was stressful.
Yeah. And I'm like, you're 45. Like, you can't lunge at a 19-year-old. Anyway.
Sure did. But
my brother has since like broken from that, but like it was really hard and frustrating to talk to him and my parents about that band when it was happening because it was so delusional and weird and like self-aggrandizing, and it was so strange to watch all these people buy into this one kind of like washed up, unreliable man's dream. And like they all went all in on it and like believed that like they were going to do a world tour and like my brother got a passport to go to South America and like none of that happened.
Right.
I mean,
we have a fleet of Teslas. Go on.
Exactly. And that's exactly the same thing. But in that way, I think that delusions can also be like not paranoid, but just straight up delusions. Noid. Yeah.
Just noid.
Just noid. Not so para. Not so. I don't know, but do you have any other situations? Like, can you think of times when that's happened to you? Yeah, in your personal simulation. And if not, that's all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. These are interesting thoughts. I don't feel like I am one who goes along with, like, hyperbolic plans. I think like I'm like the person who nods politely when people tell me about them and I'm like, this is some bullshit.
Yeah.
I think I can go along with like emotions that are not my own. Sometimes when you get dragged into somebody else's like,
yep,
you know, anger or sadness, but I don't join a grand plot too often.
Okay.
I can't think of a time I recently joined a plot, you know?
No, I can't either. I can't either. But I'm sure we're all doing this like all the time on a super low level. Just like, I don't know, because we're all like manipulating each other accidentally all the time. I feel
Yeah. People are inherently manipulative.
Yes, please. That's what I'm saying.
For sure.
But so like in conclusion, you're probably.
I did try and get you to join a cult earlier before this recording. So
let me tell you guys, Austin did about 15 minutes persuading
more.
Me on certain. I was being generous. Peloton instructors. Yeah. Why listen, I should hop on. No pun intended.
I'm part of the cult. I won't apologize for it.
No, and I'm about to be, and I will be unapologetically in it as well. And in that way, perhaps you are my primary.
Oh, for once, finally, my simulation dreams. I just leveled up in my own simulation. I just got like the Mario mushroom and grew a little bit. If I could be 5'9", I'd be greatly appreciative. Go on.
But I just wanted to say that in conclusion, this is probably not something that very many people listening will develop to an extreme degree. But I don't know.
That like, we know of.
That okay. we know of. Or that you might not even know you're doing it. But I think
but you're doing it, bitch. You're doing it. Okay.
Interesting through quarantine to just kind of like examine our relationships with each other, with media, with truly anything right now.
There are some things I've certainly slipped into some parasocial moments,
100%.
Especially during this election cycle. I never watched television. I was like glued to CNN, and I
and
was like,
developing
am I sexually
crushes on people.
To Jake Tapper,
exactly.
And then I just kept watching like hours of YouTube videos of him being like on Colbert, and I was like, I also love Colbert, which is true. Yeah, I was just really, really digging in there.
Listen,
really
she's pussy in. Deep.
I'm pussy deep in Jake Tapper CNN footage. That's three. Ding, ding, ding.
Good okay. job. but yeah, I just wanted to say, like, keep an eye out for it. I don't know. It's something interesting to think about. And I think it's something that has varying degrees because we can all have like tiny baby delusions or really big ones. I don't know if maybe
or huge ones
or giant ones. Or I don't know if you're like quarantining with a person who suffers from OCD. Like maybe that's starting to make you develop some habits that you didn't expect. I don't know.
Or if you even, you know, we talked early on a what the fuck date about why people are hoarding toilet paper and maybe some other folks, especially as like we're watching quarantine numbers spike again. I know in Chicago we've kind of got like stay at home orders like happening live again. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe you've become like a little bit more of like a hoarder in cahoots with someone who's also exhibiting like hoarding tendencies. Maybe you've become a more compulsive shopper because somebody else you're with is like buying a bunch of crap as forms of entertainment.
And I would hypothesize
maybe you joined an exercise cult like
maybe.
Me, you know?
But I would hypothesize that hoarding is probably like experiencing a spike right now.
Oh, definitely.
And secondary hoarding, a la folie à deux.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
But any other like questions, comments, concerns? Sorry, it's not in the DSM anymore.
I don't know. Just all of these like tendencies that apparently we could be rubbing off on people. I wish we were having more sex. That's all.
Oh.
Maybe some of you are.
Maybe some of you are.
Maybe some of you are pussy deep. Okay. Yes, that's four.
That is four. You can get one more. I know you can.
Oh, I can do it, bitch. Watch me. You guys thought I forgot about it when I did nothing the first half of this. Then it came in hot.
So for that opportunity.
The pussies.
Hot puss. Okay. So for that opportunity, should we pivot to a verbal game and you can try?
Yeah, I would love to work a pussy into a verbal game. Go on.
Amazing. Cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
All right, so today's verbal game, I'm just going to continue the theme of making up new games. So this one's called...
Oh, God bless this vibration.
This one's called Choose the Deluge.
Oh.
So you're going to choose the delusion that you want to have all the time.
Why not?
And it's going to be... So I have three questions for you. And each one is two parts. So first, you're going to pick a partner in crime for your folie à deux. So like, you're going to pick who you're in this relationship with.
Okay.
And it's all going to be like this or that. So would you rather be in a folie à deux partnership with your mom or with your dad?
My mom.
Okay. So now you and your mom, would you rather... You and your mom both believe that you, Austin Williams, are fully allergic to the sun, or that you have a second mouth on your back that needs feeding.
Oh, I actually, I think I'd rather go like full like the others and like think that I'm allergic to the sun. That just feels like a little bit easier to manage. Somehow. And like
your mom would have kept you inside your whole life then, though.
Well, it seems easier to explain to like people socially.
That's true.
Like, because it's like a real medical condition other than the second mouth on my back that needs feeding. Although I just want to go out on a limb. I chose my mom because like I feel like, you know, we're a team. But my dad is very resourceful. And if I had, like, if he and I had really believed I was allergic to the sun, he would have, like, really come up with some tools to help me circumnavigate that.
Oh, you're right.
Really great way.
And even but if they didn't work.
Yeah, emotionally, I'd rather do it with my mom. But, like, also, like, my dad would probably be, like, the one to, like, really facilitate my lifestyle as a sun allergic.
And if he did a bad job of making like your sun equipment or whatever, it wouldn't really matter because you're not actually allergic to the sun.
Right. He wouldn't do a bad job though. He's a perfectionist.
He wouldn't. You're right. So then on to the next pairing. Would you rather be in a folie à deux partnership with your sister or with your brother-in-law?
Oh, damn. This is actually really a hard choice. I think my brother-in-law.
Okay, so now choose the situation that you and your brother-in-law will believe, or the delusion.
Okay.
So the first choice is that
it's hard to pick your partner without knowing the delusion.
I know, and then that. I want you to tell me if like if you would have answered differently, like if you picked your sister.
Right. Totally.
So. Yeah. The first delusion choice is you believe that your mom's twin is actually in the CIA and testing on your family.
I wish my mom's twin were in the CIA and testing on my family. Okay, go on.
Or
my mom does have a twin, guys. Okay.
She does. Or that the world will end if Borders, Books, and Music doesn't make a comeback.
I fully stand by I want to do Borders, Books, and Music
with your brother-in-law.
Oh my God, yeah. Because he like is in retail. I have a retail background. Us trying to save Borders together. Honestly.
It's an amazing television show, actually.
Honestly, it could be my dream job. It's like me and my brother-in-law trying to save Borders. I can already picture how exasperated my sister is. She's like so exasperated. She's so pissed. Oh my God. And then I'm just like coming over for like important meetings all the time about reviving Borders. Also, I just want to say I loved Borders. That was
so
my preferred bookstore chain as a child. We were not a Barnes & Noble family, so fuck you. Oh man. Wow. Honestly, that sounds like
ideal.
My ideal.
Like your best
life.
Reality.
Like, I kind of wish that was my simulation, was like trying to save Borders, Books, and Music with my brother-in-law as a full-time job.
I wish that it was too.
Wow, I can just see us. I can just see us. I can imagine the polos we wear while we do this work.
Oh, my God. Those are incredible. Man. Okay, last question. So your next partner choice is either me or Ice-T.
Oh, wow. I mean, you. I'm already in delusions of grandeur with you.
Okay.
No, so, I would pick you.
So would you rather have me convince you to believe that the color red triggers / opens us up for brainwashing? So like anytime.
Color red. Are we avoiding all food with like red dye for
anything? This red record light on my computer like makes this, made me susceptible
my whole
the whole
sound
time.
Sound waves when we make this podcast are red in the program I use. Okay?
Or that postal workers are secretly bugging our homes.
I would want to fight the postal workers with you.
Seems easier than fighting red.
It seems easier and also, like, I just...
Oh, no Republican stuff intended. Sorry. Whoops.
Oh, actually, I'll fully take that
we'll pick it up.
I'll intend it. I'm choosing to intend it, okay? Fuck those pussies. Mm-hmm. Oh, there it is. Okay.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. That's five. Ugh, God bless me. I don't stand for calling people pussies in a derogatory way, but yeah, I had to make an exception for winning this
because
game.
They wouldn't like it.
Exactly. I'm trying to use their own,
slurs against
their
them.
Slurs against them. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I would also most prefer the delusion about Borders books and music.
Right?
If I could honestly, support myself if you
wanna
believing
be, if
that.
If you want to be a part of that with me and my bro-in-law.
I do.
It sounds even more fun than our gay Chick-fil-A franchise.
It does, because I'd rather work at a Borders.
Where I'm the token straight.
That's right.
That's one I of our forgot about that. Ideas.
It is. Yep. Better business.
We got a handful right now. Guys, save Borders, you know? Like, save Borders.
I went into the Borders in Springdale in Cincinnati when it was going out of business and bought some shelves because they were getting rid of everything, selling the furniture
the
and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, do you still have the shelves?
No. They're either in my parents' basement somewhere or long-lost garage.
I want someone to still have a piece of Borders, you know?
And they're so specific. They're that, like, varnished, like,
yep,
fake, pale wood.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, I can see it's really of a specific time in terms of like retail design.
It is
and just always remember that every Borders had carpet.
Just about to say the carpet reminded me of a youth room at a church.
A youth room. I could spend hours in a Borders right now.
Me too. 100% hit the cafe, get a couple magazines to read for free.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Go in some part of the children's area that's like designed for kids but feels fun as an adult still.
100%.
There was that tree you could get inside of in our Borders.
Yep, I loved that one.
I loved that.
That little amphitheater in the back, yeah.
Oh, yeah. God bless. One time I used a title sleuth in a Borders and a fellow patron approached me and was like, hey, I was wondering if you could help me find it. I'm like in high school.
Oh,
and
I remember
I'm like
that.
And I'm wearing a wool coat. Like I'm dressed for the outdoors. And at this time, it was a point in time where like my purse was like a lunchbox. And so I'm like holding a lunchbox purse.
Oh, my
and
God.
Wearing a wool coat. And she's like, hey, you could help me. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I don't work here. And she goes, oh, well, I just saw you had access to that computer. And I was like yeah, that's a title sleuth, ma'am, like anyone can use those. And she was like, oh, okay, you're just on the computer. She like wouldn't believe me that you could use, because in Borders they had the little little kiosk title sleuths around that you could type in the author name and it would tell you where what section
I was always using that
for, if they thought it was in stock
or if they needed to order it from another Borders. Exactly.
She like followed me for a little while. Very zesty.
That's really weird and dumb. We also did some Harry Potter premieres there.
I was like, man, it's a title sleuth.
Or releases, I guess.
Yeah, I bought many of a Harry Potter release, fuck you J.K. Rowling, at a Borders.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret patronizing the Borders, you know? That's what I'll say.
No. No.
I love you, Borders. Mm. Well, on that note, if you are ankle deep in pussy, there it is, and you'd like to let us know if I missed an opportunity to use the word pussy at some earlier point and you were kicking yourself,
yeah.
I'd love to hear about it. And if you too care deeply about borders, books, and music, which, I mean, I truly hope you do. We'd love to hear about it. And as always, you can find us on the internet to let us know all of those things and some other things. And, I don't know, send us your own either ors for choosing a deluge, okay? We'll take those questions, too. We'll do them on the pod.
We will.
And, yeah, as always, find us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And good morning, good day, good evening. Stay deep in the puss, you know?
Yeah, and good luck with dealing with your primary, you know? Just good luck. Bye.
Thanks for attending my simulation.